Tonight, we are here to hear Preston Hood, all the way from Maine. And I'm going to talk a little bit about his poetry and the connections, some of the connections I made between reading his poetry and Vincent Farini's work. But I wanted to start by quoting poet Elizabeth Quinlan, who heard him recently at an event in Jamaica Plain. She said, "Preston was truly with the spirit Friday." Powerful, moving reading. So we welcome you, Preston, from Maine to the Gloucester home of poet and friend Vincent Farini. He hasn't been here before, and he's just learning about Vincent, taking it all in. This Writers' Center, Gloucester Writers' Center, was founded in 2010 and is devoted to preserving the literary legacy of Gloucester and Cape Ann while creating and supporting a generative place for writers from far and near. And I want to say that if Vincent were alive, he would have been drawn to Preston. He would have begun writing to him like he wrote to hundreds of friends. Once he connected, he would send you books, articles, poems, would come to your cafe in your town. Nothing was too small to talk about. He believed in communication and follow-up. He taught his friends to answer the letters of writers, especially him. I bring him up tonight because I have been reading and rereading Preston's poems, thinking of Vincent and thinking of Preston. They have common concerns and connection to the mystic as well. The "oh" that begins some of Preston's poems and Vincent's is a cry out to the spheres and the spirits of all the generations beheld. A lyrical, reverent, and profound poet, Preston Hood's redemptive writing takes the reader to the war in Vietnam and continues through the first 15 years of this millennium with deep compassion. His most recent book, The Hallelujah of Listening, in 2011, won the Maine Literary Award in 2012. The poet Bruce Weigel writes about this book, "What joy the reader will find here in the medley of forms and vivid figures of speech. The poet is at ease using in order to tell his tales with the most appropriate music." Bruce continues, "I love Preston Hood's new poems, and I cherish the spots of time he has been able to hold still in these poems, just long enough to change your life. A Chill I Understand, published in 2006, was Preston's first book. Poet and veteran Fred Marchand wrote, "Preston Hood's poems probe all the quadrants of life, from love to war, from family to nature, from the demons to the deities. These are poems of a great and courageous heart." In my notes, I wrote, "We are stopped in epiphanies due to fresh transcendent metaphors." These lines from the poem, The Encroaching, remind us of the ways our perception and attentiveness can help us live through and beyond catastrophic experiences. "I watch five chickadees fidget, then fly into the woods. If for a second I turn away, black smoke could fill the sky." Shirley Ryder, editor of an anthology called Writing Away the Demons, comments that Preston's poem, Rung Sat, was a breakthrough poem. She writes, "Rarely does it take a poem 25 years to complete. However, it takes Preston 25 years to create Rung Sat because his mind has withheld certain information, holding significant images hostage." She claims, as many of us know, that writing is transformational, and Preston is performing one of the most difficult of transformations, the conversion of blood to ink. Preston, and one more thing I want to say, he has books here and broadsheets. Preston, welcome.
I was going to stand, but...
You can do whatever you want.
For a while.
I'll jump up if you sit.
And then I can sit down for a while. Well, thanks for all of you coming, and I want to thank the Glasses Writers Center for having me. I want to thank Dorothy Nelson for inviting me and being so generous and wonderful with her praise. And I want to thank Henry Farini. I just met him tonight, and... anyone associated with it, I really appreciate this opportunity to share my work. And I'll begin. Talking of spirits. Spirit. If you measure time from the sea to the shore and back again, walk the hitherland of lost ghosts to an island of inland silence. If you calculate the drift of plankton through the Marianas Trench of eons, into the mouths of whales, their will breach toward the herring-honed sky, the crags of old mountains, the moon-reflected ice of the heart. You might temper your probing through the worn quill of thought with a breeze over the sand beach to the offshore rocks. This next poem is dedicated to the Irish poet John F. Dean. I had him as an instructor at the William Joyner Center. And after a few years, I wrote this poem about him. But in that writing of the poem, it's a rejoicing as well of our singing. After the rainbow, the luminous slant of sunlight through clouds, the flat calm of pond stillness, where a frog trills a single note, and the oriole, the sound older than anyone. Stars glint and you exalt. I envision you mapping the sky with a silver-etched pencil against the crease of darkness. We assume the spirit lives to a renewal, yet we enter the abyss and find no answers. We want our loved ones back and learn the best part of our singing are the shadows we leave as we travel this earth and beyond to be discernible. Climb from our struggle into the marvelous. I'm going to keep switching back the books here. I want to read you a kind of a funny poem. My wife said to me, "Don't you write anything funny?" And I had a project around the house to cut the big pine that was leaning next to the house down. So this is the poem that came out of that. Felling the pine. As I remember, it was leaning more toward the house than the lawn, where the first green cones dropped and the scattered oak leaves smudged against the slate walkway. So we needed something more than wedges to drop the pine where we wanted it to land. A winch would do, maybe even a pulley. There could be a problem, my wife said. A hole in the roof? A broken window? Why don't you just hire a professional tree expert to do the job? Yes, dear. I will do the best job I can this time, to listen to you without interrupting and cut the tree down without hitting the house. I did cut the tree down, and a branch just blew by the window, and I had my fingers crossed anyway. Mm-hmm. I go to a clinic for PTSD every winter. And in the clinic this one year, we had a fellow who, an Army fellow, he's always, as he bounced around on his hands and tried to just shadow box the air all the time, you know, and I said, wow. And I'd walk with him, and this is the poem that came out of that. The Edge. Someone once said the edge was near the abyss, directly overlooking it, but I say it is walking the sword of life in a darker time. Asking a loved one to come back now from the dead as they were in youth could be it too. Or when you're old and the body reaffirms itself in a mirror of light, putting away those negative thoughts of age, seeing wrinkled skin, sagging chest, and double chin. I know an Army guy who says, quote, if I'm in shape, I've got the edge, end quote. He has to stay on top of things, stay in the pathway to fitness, walks backwards on his toes, so the guy who's going to hit him, but never does, hasn't yet, won't. He tapes his knuckles, puts on the gloves, punches the bag, 1, 2, 3, whacks, like that. He's got the edge. Quote, I hit the heavy bag long enough until the hard punches become easy, end quote. I swear if a fight ever happened, he may win or not, his dropped heart, his bruised ego, scorched of that shame. It would be devastating to see him weeping in his room. For him, being on the edge is a way of dealing with humiliation. For me, being on the edge is one real story of his life. For others, just stay tuned. Maybe their edge is going faster and faster, permitting themselves to glow, to persevere in time. So the heart, after X number of beats, finds its stillness. Or the edge might be at the top of a trellis where light moves diagonally across the amaryllis and intersects the tips of the buds. And I write about love, too, besides war and other things. And I haven't really gotten into those yet, but they will come. If I had a place, if I had a place for my leftover love, I'd pin it to the sun you handed me, tied to a blossom at the end of a long southern pine table. Place it near the stem your fingers once held. Leave it in a turquoise vase so the stem, when you turned it toward you, catches the yellow light and dust like a semi-precious stone. You smile and think, bees, honey, hummingbirds flirting with swollen stamens. This poem is about PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. And he's a Vietnam vet. He's also a wonderful teacher. He was a famous and wonderful poet. He was also my mentor for the most, I guess we all have mentors, but he is probably up here for me. And he's a wonderful friend, and his name is Bruce Weigel. And in 2009, he had me go to Ohio to visit him on Veterans Day. And this is the poem I came up with him about him. Ohio for Bruce Weigel. You watch crows shuttle to earth and blanket the lawn. Like Rorschach dark wings, they land on the furled rows of red and gold. The swirling Ohio wind luring Rick out from the phantoms of dusk. I saw him walk through my yard of long shadows, and when I looked out the screen, I saw people moving in the trees without thinking for a millisecond. I squatted down. That's where I am, brother. When you heard the jackdaw cawing in the disappearing afternoon light, wasn't that a sign to let him go so you could move in safe shadows and cool? When you heard the earth turned day of flowers, these acres of loss are the Veterans Day of your imagining, for redemption of gut-hot grief and lifts you with an ascension of voices calling you back. Let go of sorrow. Let sorrow go. Not easy to do. What the dark does. The bird the child found was hurt. We must enter the mist, sit down in the fire of thought, think of the thread of silence that leads to light. December, slow haze voices. Long war into darker days, attack dogs on prisoners, waterboarding and sleep deprivation. Nothing new. Mostly what upsets are the obituaries reaching 4,000. The president talks at us but does not listen. Families are full with grief. They're suffering, no form of glory. On the snow, the low sun flickers. Dead soldiers cry out soundlessly. Frozen chimes are frozen chimes. Crossing a minefield. In one helmet of fear, the blast. You imagine your feet, arms, legs, but mostly your balls blown off and your head. You envision walking, crawling, passing that inch of life toward death. Life ending could go like this. Slivers of shrapnel rip into the body. Pain cuts the gash in the imagination deep. The hollow of the brain shuts down forever. Why is fear a weeping eye, a crown of thorns? Why do I feel someone is driving nails through my feet? In the battlefield of hate, what will happen to the bodies of men? What will claim their miserable souls? What high moment will stop them from shrieking as they cross an open field? What heart will find them worthy of love? Within men's passion of triggers, the flashback which happens faster and slower and back again. Beneath the scar, the deep incision in the souls of men. Is there a moment and a person that may make all the difference to them? I'm going to change for a bit and read a new poem to my friend Nicholas Losky, entitled, What It's Like to Pass Through Time. Though my very eyes are misting, this glorious morning mystifies me. The lighter air, the sun dog's intimate ice, a sharpening insistence of glare, like the devil's murderous gaze that corrals me with distraction. But what do I know, armored in thought? For milliseconds in loneliness, am I forever lost? Not hardly. Though my brackish memory needs a jumpstart, I wonder how existence sustains me at the intersection of light, space, time. Amazing it still does, with little help from me. Of course I am happier living with humans and goats, not celestial bodies. The wind speaks of love, the dream of a longer life. Where geese move as clouds and land on southbound branches and are blessed for their being from yesterday's goodbyes. Rainbows are few and far between when storm clouds pummel near and nothing is left to chance. I jig or dance, roll out in the exercise ball for stomach crunches, my way of saying, fuck off, to the mummy bound in bandages. My time will arrive when the amaryllis intersects the tips of the buds. And then and only then you can give me an updated analysis of finally coming home. I was up at White River Junction, VA, up in Whitewater, Vermont, Whitewater River, Vermont, and came up with this poem. I was in a PTSD group. At the White River Junction, VA, the PTSD veterans on the way to ground east are like aching teeth in the VA's jaw. Flashbacks, flashbacks, flashbacks. No intimacy. The bones of their shadows not yet wormed. For them, war wages on, a blood mark years long. Human beings who once lived among us, woe be gone. When I first started writing about war poems, and in a minute I will read you the poem that Dorothy, sorry.
Just speak up a little.
Okay, in a minute I will start and read Rungsat, because it's an important poem. But other things you see there, even though you're not involved in the daily killing, which you do, but there's also the times when people are brought to graves registry in body bags, and this is about that. Dog tags. At graves registry, bodies are stacked like sacks of rice. In Morton's mouth, in Argy's, and in the bodies next to them, one dog tag wedged. Rigger clenches the door and jaw and holds it securely so nobody gets sent back, misidentified. Silver, who photographs the bodies, says he sent back unknowns before, and it still happens to some every day. Their dull metal tags, name, blood type, religion, and serial number, dislodge from the mouth into the dark nowhere. Yeah, this poem I started writing in Vietnam. And believe me, it took me around 25 or 30 years to finish. And that woman, who was the editor of Writing Away the Demons, she knew it better than I did. I had no idea why. And that was about it. Okay, here we go. Sorry for that delay. Rungsat. I rappel through the door of the gunship, thinking about someone to love. On patrol, I'm a hunter in the blackness, dozing off, hardened, tired of danger. I sight the enemy, waist-deep in Rungsat, muscular legs standing executioner quiet, black-green smudge and sweat curled on lip. A snake stops me. I wade ahead, fall through myself like a stone. Enemy voices passing only meters away. The backdrop of dark, life's death. I scan the horizon for movement. Count the bodies across the canal. Wait until they slip into the mud. My mind is a red-brown blur, a gauze for the wounded we torture. What's happening seems not true. 2 hours before dawn the next day, we insert by chopper on some Viet Cong farmer's land to interrogate sympathizers and search for the mortar tubes the NVA shell us with. We demand revenge. The smell of rice at the jungle top, lazy orange mist shifting like smoke. In low silhouette, we patrol to ambush, our bodies surrounded by dark, the shadow of surprise suspended in us. Across the trail, wind rips nipper palm, fear crawling at our feet, a wounded man. me radio in an airstrike. The wounded lie with the dying. The dragged bodies hurried away, disappear into bamboo. Blood trails along the river mark a company retreat. Abandoned bombed-out bunkers, shallow graves dug quickly, brown uniformed and black pajama bodies, rice bowls and fish heads, children half buried in dirt. I am a man half in the water, half out. My legs suck into mud. My hands hold my head outstretched. Hasten to deliver me among the dead. I'm going to shift a little bit, and I'm also writing my memoir, and this is one of the chapters in my memoir that starts to try to tie things together, which is the way I got to do it, is you just write and it all falls together somehow. It was Sunday, if memory serves me right. Rock hard, my heart died, and my liver too, leather-fisted. Some days you don't always see the heart bleeding to marrow, still hanging in the air this ache of loss above the square. Death is a channel where you tunnel through rubble. Other days the adrenaline-killing hunger that feeds me begins with ouzo in the belly of the beast, leaning on memories like rifles. Sometimes I don't always see this dying, this twitching manacle around my neck. The flash, like Kilgore, like Arik's suicide, Quibbler's jump. Death's tunnel to rubble usually strikes at dark, because thought is only electric impulse of blood squirting. It ambushes me when I least expect it, like the flash did. That time I'm jumping off a lipship in rotor-whirling dust at Nambe, I catch the flash, the sound cracks, the gun drops, the body falls back against the white door of the barracks. I run upstairs, he convulses, I scrape brains into his head, kneel over him, hear voices, hands tear me away. I'm in the bar, drinking. Today I don't want to think about my son who put a rifle to his mouth or my dog Quibbler jumping. I'd rather walk with morning's wind, hearing its bellowing gale sweep from the north of Sleevemore, back to the east, to the south, into Dugort, and all afternoon the sky is the dark eye of the moon. On these days I don't want to confront my demons or relive them. I don't always have that choice. But where are those days when all I had to know at 17 was that the trains went slow enough on the long curve out from the yard, I would jump on the ladder and ride all the way to Northern Maine Junction? Where are the days at dusk when the whippoorwill calls and the swift river is an arrow through my heart? And the evenings, too, when we crouch on moss, shouldered between tall spruce, and listen to a moose gruff breathing, and wait for salt to rise like a tide to his throat. Now and then, when I write in April, the sap rising, the mountains stand clear and high. But too often I remember how powerless we become beneath God's thumb, and forget how a lunar eclipse changed us while we watched. We remember the crucifix, the crossing over, the unattained love. On the edge, near the abyss, we walk a sword of life in a darker time and want our loved ones back. I cannot be the only person who sees hope run out the back door in a slip with a gun in her hand. She's a coward for leaving us alone. Either way, it don't mean nothing. She's gone, holding her ass in her arms. What an outrage! I want my words to spill on the ground like fruit. I'm tired of writing about the death tolls reaching 4,000. We need to talk about the 22 suicides. 22 suicides per day. I want to search for that warm part of my son who reaches out, who touches in his clever way the sun on the windowsill. In the yard today, a blue jay flits and pecks while I paint naked and listen to bees swarm. I draw a door in the sky to enter. I imagine reading my own story. Each time I turn the page, my eyes close. When I forget, work backwards from the last thought. Write it down. Retrace my steps back to the mirror. Look inside out. Make no mistake about it. Be sure to understand the sun abandoned, the stars so far apart. Whose wedding did he say was on the moon in such darkness? Go back. Listen. Know the fear of my deepest self. Talk to it like it's me, which it is. Find what's lost, what's found. Fragrance of wind, sundown passing in deep woods, low among the stars. Yesterday I walked about the sky, snow falling on blue ice. Tomorrow I climb Katahdin. So that's just a brief part of my memoir. Somebody asked me, this happened about this poem is just brand new, but I want to read it because someone asked me this foolish question, I thought, and it was about, quote, "Your poems about losses are always so depressing. Is there ever any chance you see light?" End quote. Wow, I said to myself. I didn't want to insult the person. But anyway, another one, quote, too, this epigraph is, "If I keep a green bough in my heart, a singing bird will come," a Buddhist proverb. Mm-hmm. Writing Through, I entitled this. Writing through blood pigment loss, the granite wall of grief, the weight of years measured by suicides, of snows clinging to the soul, and the shooting car crash of my son by his own hands, was as if he helped death scrawl her name with lipstick beside his across the bathroom mirror. Here, the landscape darkens, knows more than I know. Really? I don't know about you, but as winter's tubers shoot up like asparagus, red asparagus, the peonies in the south garden push the need to be raked leaves aside, and my juices begin to flow. I'm fed up with the four horsemen of apocalypse riding headless through darkness, luring me into their stalls. Between silence and shouts, the promise of twilight before first light against the orange sun. I see green grow again, and the garland bough opens my heart to singing. From dark to brown, from shady green to deeper jade, my vein-like leaves are hues, the chlorophyll tone of lightness raised from that open branch of sky. Beyond these words, this random timber of light quiets me. Such an uplift of memory. I love Chopin's nocturnes, don't you? The piano of cloud, where dreams are born, such luminous tinge. The first thing I remember when I woke up in Dublin is that double rainbow, our arms hugged. Yes, and the double side rush of wind spins desire, while a slant of sun and moon speak to the gods. A breath of sun and the watery waves and the peacock's plume moon transports me afar of shadow. Look quick with me before we miss the stars that pulse like beacons. It's raining snow and the evening is a wedding breath of love. Still the roof does not leak, and the wash of moonlight through the skylight is a moment of passion that wants you. Sit with me, all evening into dawn, and open our wounds to rain's forgiving shadows. Shades, let the sea wash our hair. Do it with me 3 times tonight and after. Listen to the minnows breathe in shoals. The minnows breathe in shoals. The Bearded Man Sings, for Michael Makelyn. Michael Makelyn was a Maine poet and a wonderful teacher. And he took the kids to Vermont College, the high school kids he had in his class, an English class, and they were all there on a trip, and he died. And it was devastating to everyone. He had a beard. So I wrote this poem about him. To the bearded man who sings, to winter's heart closing like a fist, and to verses fathomless in blue, a velvet road, a neon branch, a scarf bundled in a wave, all this luminescence at the edge of mist, showers and rises, arcs and rises, an opera aria wailing from the surf. Of course, he does require this blue distance to rid himself of personal abyss. Climb a cliff and howl to quench the soul. And then we all, I guess I have to go back to the losses here and there. And this is out of my book, The Hallelujah of Listening, which some of these others are too. I've seen the thousand-yard stare caged in the eyes of men who have gone to war. Through gods they speak, whirlwinds of bloodlust and grief. While dying, I recall an eagle gliding upside down into the horizon, the sun golden bleeding, the late afternoon of indelible autumn on the mall. Burnt leaves blowing. I begin to let go of daily and nightly sorrow of loss, sometimes even the adrenaline-killing hunger that feeds me. Then mid-step, I'm in Mudsuck River ambush Baklau, mortars pounding darkness, bodies flipping through fog. I'm a strange person to myself. Killing peels back memory like flesh. I watch the dead rising. The planet I live on drops like a grenade at our feet. In death throes, a portal opening, filling space with light, calling. I fear the silence of footsteps sneaking up and sorrow's shadow buried. Loss corners me after the killing, a rat eating. Death is a shotgun fired through the heart. This poem is for my sister. She also lost a son as I did, but not by suicide. He died in an automobile accident. And I was visiting her about a year ago, and I wrote this poem for her, an elegy for my sister Masha on her son's death. And it's from her voice. Today I walk out of the house across the field and road to the pond you swam in. I breathe your breath, follow your path through the wildflowers and timothy, burnt August yellows, Indian paintbrush reds, growing now in this overcrowded earth. The years may have mildewed around me, but your place is here, where the rope you swung from still fishtails the wind over water, a branch of sunlight holding it up. Across the decades, I've glimpsed your return from the swim hole, silhouetted against the moon, gestures of Tai Chi, your silence, a seashell to hear the ocean in. Sometimes, Wes, I jumped as you did, tried to reach the rope, but couldn't quite catch it, crashed in my discontent. Since you've gone, I'd like to know how you swung from it and returned home happier, now that you're not around to show me. Tomorrow, maybe, I'll reach for it again. And if you're interested, I have broadsides out there, too, of poems where they're on a page with an image on the back of the poem. And I have a bunch of them there for $2. And I also have my book and CD for sale for $10. I was in Vietnam and I wasn't on patrol. I decided to take a night off and go to Saigon. Well, that turned into I wanted to go down and walk through Tu Do, which was the ill repute place, you know, where all the guys go. And I'm walking through there and I want to go down to the docks where they're building ferro cement boats. I never got there. But South Vietnam, 1970. Dust seizes its aperture at the fountain intersections of Tu Do and Nguyen Way streets. The dimming evening light whirs with Saigon smog and heat. Motor scooter riders and bicyclists cough up exhaust fumes salted with gas and peppered with oil. My eyes tear and ache as I walk through the black market streets. Nightlife full of Nook Mom in a language I don't understand trifles in. Flares seem to hang in the sky above our heads in the veiled eeriness of time held still as the streets empty and darken at curfew. I'm on a 24-hour reprieve from my usual search and destroy missions as other members of SEAL Team 2 drink in nearby bars or smoke cigarettes while haggling with pimps over prostitutes inside. I'm just one man walking down a street in a country at war. All of us soldiers or civilians, Vietnamese or Americans, are the targets of the 122-millimeter rockets that whoosh in silence, then explode. As the blasts move nearer, my skin-taut head twitches with fear. 20 meters away and closing, I see my dream car, a two-tone blue and white 55 Bel Air Chevy, with its name shining in gold script as it passes by and continues on. I pause to watch it disappear into the darkness of Saigon, and just when I begin to turn, a rocket blows up so close to me it rips off my shirt as I'm thrown from the street through a doorway. Dazed on top of others, my mind races to the fountain intersection where girls in Ao Zai zip into the darkness on Hondas, nipple-palm yellows in dry heat, while an old woman squatting spits betel nut juice into the street. I'll try to give you a little change of pace here. How you doing? Words. You all like words, right? Words just keep appearing. They visit me in sleep. In droves, they attend to my writing, appear in my worn eraser after grimacing about what is being said. Can't take them anywhere without a hassle. When I least expect it, they visit me in dreams and tell it like it is. Just to annoy me, they reappear at waking or show up in my cereal bowl. Like monkeys jumping from tree to tree, they tell me I know next to nothing. But still they sing me their blue-black songs, luring me into their lairs where darkness lurks. When I ask, where's the light, or the church bells ringing, they speak in tongues. Somehow they move me so easily on quiet afternoons to write more poems. After, when I sit alone by the window and look out, it is quiet once more. There's not only been a lot of military suicides, but there's also been a lot of rape and sexual trauma in the military, and nothing's really done about it. And this was about one person that shared me her self-portrait. And she asked me for a recommendation to art school. And I said, yeah, no problem. It would be great. I'd be glad to do it for you. And I saw the portrait, and this is, I didn't write the recommendation until after I wrote the poem, but it just was there and it came out. Her self-portrait bridges the gorge of ordinary day, half dead, half alive, between the leaf nose and basin boat of burning women, chained like angels being taken from the left eye assault of thought into a series of blood punches, right eye trauma, where a woman lives fiery vertigo, rape, tries to push ice shackle numbness, suicide, away with muteness, tethered to daily living. She plays by the rules in this black-bellied staunching of fear, tells herself her prisoned heart is someone else's life. Something bad then only seems bad now. Soon a lark will sing her awake. She hates long days' invisibility beneath the stars. When she loses herself in blue-black pigment loss, she doesn't always recognize the flare-ups. Everything is something to a kick-ass Marine. She'll kick out monster, opaque fright. Still, there are nights the moon tells her how the heart's dark repairs itself. The mouth you don't see, stares us down, pukes up bile, was kissed by not asking permission, would make dislocated sounds if open. She feels a sequestered stare is grit enough to tell she's falling. Doesn't need a mouth to speak her truth. Caged tears translate pain to art. Her swim through ocean froth is cleansing. And after I got back here, I was a builder, a carpenter, a mason, stonemason, everything. I did all that stuff because I needed to, as someone just said, you work with your hands and you knit or whatever, but your heart is thinking of words. So I happened to have the chance of a friend who invited me over to build a house for a friend of his in Israel during the Gulf War. And I'm going, this God's going to be coming in, you know, that kind of thing. And I said, well, should I really do this? So anyway, I did it, and this is what it was about. Building a home in Israel during the Gulf War. In Metzpeh Abarim, time is the interpretation of an ancient language, horn from Karn to Karn. A cold moon ribboned across stone paths. In the din of the afternoon, silhouettes of birds hung in air. Scuds hammered the lookout post a kilometer away. Beneath our feet, the earth quaked and shook as another thud pounded the heart. I meet new friends and move among them slowly, to design and build a stone almond wood house. Dark clouds surrounded each other, a booming sky, a poem forgotten memory, and droning sounds of war caused many to panic, yet my building ideas nurtured their hearts. We formed a landscape of love, fire burning through our souls. At dusk, our energy hummed. Friendships last deeply. That evening, after we broke bread, the chirping of birds were heard, with the waterfall in the stones and ravines and distant streams. A red moon eddied on the pond. An American soldier dies every day and a half on average in Iraq and Afghanistan. Veterans kill themselves at a rate of one every 80 minutes. More than 65, 6,550 veteran suicides are logged in every year, more than the total number of soldiers killed in Afghanistan and Iraq combined since those wars began. The New York Times Sunday Review, April 14, 2012. And since then, that has only diminished to 18 a day from 22. And it's sad because nobody ever talks about or wants to hear about it. Or just, what about the president? What about Congress? What about Senate? What about all these people? And nobody just, they ignore it. And it bothers me. So I wrote this poem entitled Scattershot. Hearts wound, the scream and cry of anger, of others' agony, of yours, another's death. Millennium of killing, razor-wrist atrocities, nose-throat endings, Glock to mouth, 22 per day. Who listened to their darker sadness? Who built a temple for their loss? The opaque glass of insomnia, flashing Citgo sign of PTSD, the do this, do that signs, desert sand of nightmare, the body armor of rage, 22 per day. The dilated pupil of despair, where thoughts ducked up, 22 per day. 22 per day. Whom they loved was not enough in the morning, not enough in the evenings between them. I've come to think death is not enough, nor roses hurled to a wearing world. 22 per day. 22 per day, 22 per day. Got a light one now. Crunching leaves are not grass in drunken fog that envelops me, them, us all. Dusk is not light to a child lost. Plum clouds, the pendulum heart, body parts, parts of bodies, legs, arms, ears, war vets losing touch. When I'm losing touch, sunless, songless, I eat leaves, yellow, gold, brown, crunched. I chew them like a spider eating flies. I become a blade of grass. I eat green when sun dogs are skyless. Sometimes I eat leaves in the hue-dewed columbine. You know the whole camouflage by the nip of palm of darkness is another dimension. In my tar-black unwillingness to relive my kills, I put them in a safe and bury it. I eat leaves. There is no blood in my stomach until the gurgling trapped air leaves. Ever thought of eating twigs? Silver, gold, beach green, this toss of syllables, a worthy passing. I would like to read a poem. I had the opportunity to have a grandchild and 2000, let me see what it is now. Six, I think it was. Anyway, he was 4 days old and I got to hold him. As you can see in one of the broadsides over there. His name is Cullen. 4 days old, waking. I hugged my first grandson, rocking back and forth above the swaying white daffodils. Hear his breath measured and calm, and discover those sea deep eyes that blink from the water music of sleep. His tiny fingers open, close, embrace my thumb, the moment sharing. Our lives intertwine, branch toward light. While he gazes up at me and into this world, his eyelids flutter. I wonder what he sees, how he thinks. What does he want to hear from me? 4 days, just four, too young to focus or concentrate, yet somewhere in sleep where he should be. How irresistible in my arms, his head leaning against my chest, the bright noon warming around him. Peace composes his face. His serene expression breathes love to me in code. I hold him long enough against my cheek to feel his pulse and yawning grin awaken and arouse in me a new beginning where everything again is possible. When I listen closely, I can almost hear him speak. Okay, I got two more poems, and I'm going to read, and then I'm going to end with that thing of finish, huh? I'll find it in a minute. Where the birds landed, there were pilings and such a numerous amount of red flamingos taking off. The sky looked like flames rising over the horizon. Cumulus clouds pillow the blue, and from above they are cotton balls floating on water. At the edge of dusk is a double future of lower gray and green. The past has come to pass, and what lies ahead is a tension we don't quite understand, yet is positioned just below the watermark. At first I didn't pay attention. I wanted into the darker reality of shadow. So I walked in the graveyard after my death. I wanted surprise, so I called for a sea captain drowning. A ship clock rocks in the dark. Years of salt haze stops the hands at 9 o'clock. The second hand is a double-ended arrow pointing at the 10 and 4. To the lower right of the sky is a ripped-out page from a flower book with the roots of a delphinium apparently severed with a torn page, and a white horse is jumping out of another clock placed below the first one, a Cornell collage. Somehow I wanted to ride the energy of the collage against confusion, against the pink two-dimensional spike triangle, and into the great openness of how we want to think about interpretation today. I wanted to have my poem listen to itself. I wanted to have a relationship with my poem that I never had before. So I counted the shadows on trees. It was difficult because the wind was blind drunk and the dead would pretend to be awake. But as I counted shadows, I was in a dream going backward, passing silhouettes which looked like gargoyles changing shape. First I was a beast, then an angel. I was even an acrobat in a Ferlinghetti poem, falling off of one of those words he constantly repeats, like waiting or rebirth or flying, stretched like a rubber band on a finger, pointing out to somewhere in the future which hasn't happened, shot into a world that elongates, shortens, and widens. Today I know this to be true because I was superimposed in shadow, formless. I was an idea painted in an illusion, a magician of speechless messages. Tomorrow this world was only imagined. When you read this, it may be in a time capsule 100 years hence, or it is next week, when you hear me shout it to those who don't listen, when I walk down Main Street, I should say East Main Street. Mm-hmm. Oh, poems of mystery, oh, field of words opening up into stories. Mm-hmm. And I want to dedicate the reading tonight to my friend Dale Swan, who died a year ago, April 26. of cancer. She was such a wonderful person, and while she was alive, I gave her this poem. And you know, I think poetry is about nature. It's about a lot of things, but it's also about redemption and giving back and just acknowledging who are great in the world, like this friend of mine, Dale. Wind across your face, somewhere out there on the inner side of your world, bright light can only make you stronger and surely closer with John. Look deep into yourself, your identical absolute, a cosmos shimmering. The ancients tell us we are enamored with something. Call it love's quality of giving when you step out from your body and into your hope, your heart. Your hosannas are blooming, a glowing, a fireweed of passion. Fondness of care is a joy that we inherit, a resolve of how the pyramids were formed with a plumb line, thus how will and love are built. Yes, Dale, look deep into yourself and sense life moving within, around and about you. Explore the simple things of wanting to dance all night to a new moon in an old body. Let your thoughts flutter in God's given light. Fear not the thunder or the rain. Turn from the tide that pulls you under to the flow of in and out. Sense how the chi of your body wants renewal, not the anchor of night. Remember the mirror of light is not the Hubble, but your heart and feminine moon of dawn. Oft in the world is a sea of unresolved questions for you to resolve. Go to your brown cupboard kitchen, find turmeric and spices that heal. Go to the ancient manual of woman's seascape. Draw out the cruel cells from your lingering light. Revisit your life at the power of 10 with the astonishment of rejoicing. Anoint with lighting of candles and feel your whole body thrum. See the clouds of orange armadas. Follow their tethered fingers away from the darkening waters. Friends and loved ones wish for you to be a pulsing star, not a black hole falling in on itself. Your salvation, being here with all of us for another day. Life is short. But giving to others is the calligraphy of your heart. Dale, still your light shines within us, for we see you as the monarch, born of persistence and luminosity, on another earthly journey, fluttering back and forth between seasons, with no end in sight. And I'm going to end instead of the other one because I can't find it. I'm going to end with this one. We all wonder what comes next, right? We find the end by mixing tears with happiness, burning with the agony of how much war consumes, knowing no love or God or spirit can claim us. By revisiting all the past walked, all the darkness traveled, the sorrow in the mouth deep love we lived, we find the constellations of our lives by dismantling the pain of the body. And in the earth, enduring the past of our delinquencies, recovering the youth stripped from us. And in the earth forever time, we see life for what it is, a hand that leads us into sorrow. Here we desperately insist on passion, wandering among the dead of us, within the old shells of our bodies, wondering whether something laughable or peaceful or real comes next. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.